Welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I am your host, Dustin Albino. This week, I am joined by two of my colleagues at FrontStretch.com, Mike Neff and Phil Alloway, as we're here to break down yet another dominating performance by Kevin Harvick, as the number four team has now won two races out of the three this season. Guys, Harvick is coming off a race where he led over half the race at Atlanta. Then this past weekend, he led 214 out of 267 laps. Neff, I'll start with you. What has he and Ronnie Childress found early on in the season?
I'm curious. I mean, I think it was actually found at the end of last year, because it seems like a lot of people have forgotten the fact that they went to Texas during the playoffs and won straight up against Truex. So they had kind of figured something out last year. The curious thing for this year that I'm wondering about, and it's not so much Harvick and them as it is the Toyotas and specifically JGR, I feel like this standard splitter or common splitter seems to have changed the playing field a little bit, and I feel like the Fords were already in a position to where they had compensated from the lack of front downforce that their car had to begin with. So when they went to this common splitter, it seems like it has affected them less than the Toyotas, and I think that's why you're seeing him go over to that common splitter, I believe, is hindering Toyota a little bit. Not a lot, because, I mean, let's be honest, Kyle Busch was coming there near the end of that race, and I think if they had a little bit more distance on that race, it may have been a different story.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point, Neff, with that splitter, but like you said, if Harvick came on real strong at the mile and a half at the end of last year, and then at Charlotte in the playoffs, I believe he swept the first two stages only to finish, I don't know, top five or so to Truex. But yeah, I mean, he's coming on strong, Phil. What would you say about the past two performances, really, where he's led 395 laps in the past two races?
It seems like, obviously, I was never doubting Harvick and Rodney Childers. Those guys are going to be a tough app at all times, basically. This common splitter probably is playing a bigger role than I think, but I feel like the tire wear actually has played a big role as well. That was a big surprise, seemingly, on Sunday, and something that really didn't correlate to the other two races in Las Vegas. And if you want, especially if you watch the in-car views, you started hearing and noticing a lot of the same things that Harvick was doing in Atlanta. Just backing off early and toying with everyone, which is something that I don't think anybody was really expecting going into the race. And it seems like he's really, with this package, they really, really mastered the tire management. And given the wear you had on Sunday, if you manage to master the tire wear, you're going to be in a great place.
Yeah, I agree. And it looks like, honestly, Ford, if it is the splitter, it looks like Ford has figured it out, because they're all fast, at least Penske and Stewart Haas. But guys, like I mentioned, Harvick's led 395 laps over the past two races. There's only been 799 laps this season, so that means he's led 49.4% of all laps. And we're going to Phoenix, which he has eight wins at. Mike, what are the chances that, like, his dominance just keeps on rolling through the West Coast?
I mean, it's going to be hard, although we are going to a 2 mile track after this one, and Larson has proved that he can run well at 2 mile tracks, and he again was up there in the mix this weekend. So I feel like the Chevy guys are figuring out that new body already, so I think they're going to be in the mix, at least the Chip Ganassi gang. But yeah, going to Phoenix, the rest of the teams, I don't even know why they're bothering. I mean, as dominant as they have been already, and knowing how well Harvick gets around that track, it will be truly stunning if Harvick is not dominant again this weekend, just because Phoenix has been his playground for so long, and with as good as they've got that car running, I feel like Phoenix should be a layup. We'll see how California goes. I think the Ganassi guys might have a little something for him when we get to California.
Yeah, I mean, in all fairness, he hasn't won at Phoenix, and this will be the 2-year anniversary. But before that, he'd won 6 out of the past 8. So, Phil, I think Harvick's probably the favorite this week, wouldn't you say?
Yes, it appears so. The start to Harvick's season reminds me a lot of 2015. That was a year, as you might remember, I'm looking at the stats right now. He won the last 2 races of 2014 to win that title. Then he finished no worse than 2nd the first 5 races of 2015.
It's crazy.
And that included wins at Vegas and Phoenix, and he led 116 laps at Atlanta, 142 in Vegas, 224 big ones in Phoenix. It seems like it's that kind of season. And if you, I don't know how much you remember of that, but basically the dude was untouchable for most of the year, and had there been no playoffs, he would have won the title by like multiple races, but for points, because he was that much better and more consistent than everyone else. It's shaping like it could be that kind of year, at least for the first few weeks.
Yeah. And like I mentioned, though, all the Fords have really been running well, and especially in my opinion, I think Team Penske's kind of stuck out. And obviously, I mean, they've been good, I don't know, since they were with Dodge, honestly. But this past weekend, they had Blaney win the pole, and then all 3 of their cars got top 10 finishes for the first time ever. And I think they've ran 190-something races with 3 cars. Mike, what do you think about Penske's start to the year?
Well, and don't forget that the satellite Wood Brothers were right in there, too. Menard had a great run as well. They absolutely have shown, I mean, Ford in general has been strong. But, yeah, the Penske team, it's always a question when a team adds to their stable. And to have a third team coming in, that usually stresses you out a little bit more from a resource standpoint. And takes a while for everybody to kind of get on board and get their arms around it. And, I mean, they rolled into Daytona and they were strong right off the bat. They've been strong in Atlanta and in Vegas. I will be surprised if Logano and Keselowski don't have at least a win, if not multiple wins, by the time we get back to Daytona. And, in all honesty, Menard looks like he's going to have a good shot, too. And, I mean, it's Penske. You know that they've got the resources, they have the game plan, they have the formula to win, and it's just going to be a matter of time before they reel off a few of them.
Phil, what's your take on that, on Penske?
Well, it pretty much mirrors a lot of what Mike just said. I mean, this is a good bunch, and having Blaney in the fold this year really, really helps them as well. Yes, they've had 3 teams out there before. This is by far the strongest lineup they've ever had is 3 teams. I mean, previous to this, you had basically they created third. They expanded it 3 by buying Jasper Racing. They ending gone as a rook and a waffle. Hornets for a bunch of years, and Hornets underperformed. Remember, Hornish was a rookie. He couldn't stay in the top 35 at one point.
Yeah.
He was having trouble making races at one point, and it was ugly. They're not going to have that. This is the first time Penske's ever had 3 cars that are capable of finishing in the top 10. And sort of same thing with Stuart Haas. You have 3 cars in which everybody's equal and can equally contribute to the whole program. I think you've seen some of the, I want to say it was Harvick that mentioned that they can actually get something out of the 10 now that Almirola's in the car instead of Adam. So, shot across Danica.
Oh, absolutely.
But it just said something that now they're, Stuart Haas in general is going to be a stronger organization because of having better input from Almirola.
Yeah, I'm going to make a statement here, and I want you guys to either agree or disagree and tell me why. Team Penske is the best team in NASCAR right now. Neff, what do you got?
If you say top to bottom, I would probably give you that. Just because, yes, they've had three cars, and all three of their cars have looked capable of winning all three of the first three races. Stuart Haas, you've had Harvick, and you've had Busch. I mean, Almirola was half a lap from winning the Daytona 500, but he wasn't as in the mix at Atlanta and Vegas, although he's still up there running in it. And then you have Bowyer, and that's a whole other wild card thrown into it that Bowyer's still trying to get his bearings, I think. And you know about somebody that's under some pressure this year. Bowyer is the one. I mean, we talked about it after Atlanta, that was his first top five on a mile-and-a-half track since 2013. And that is saying something, because I realized he was in some tough equipment there with H. Scott, although I blame him a little bit on there three this year. So, yeah, top to bottom, I think you're on to something for Penske there. I'd still think if you take your top two cars, I would argue that Stuart Haas is as good or better than anybody else out there.
And you could probably throw Gibbs in if you're going to take the top two, probably Gibbs. But I wouldn't say that their four teams are better than the three Penske teams. And then Hendrick. I mean, none of the Hendrick teams can even come close to Penske right now.
Hendrick is out to lunch right now.
Phil, would you agree with that statement, or do you think there's a better team in NASCAR right now?
As of right now, it's a little hard to say. I don't think so right now, but we're only three races into a 36-race season. A lot of stuff can change over that time. You go to certain tracks, certain other guys are really strong. Fontana next week, who knows? Well, I know Kyle Larson's going to win. Then you have Easter break, you get Texas. Martinsville these days is a borderline wild card. Anything can happen.
But Penske's always run well at Martinsville, at least the past handful of years.
That's true.
And if you include Menard, if you include Menard into this, which I mean basically is a Penske car, they got four of the top nine positions in the points right now. And yes, it is early, but man, they're getting off to a strong start. And speaking of strong starts, we're going to continue with this Ford theme. Guys, they led 672 of the 799 laps this year. That's over 84%. What's going on? Why can't these other manufacturers keep up?
You know what's awesome is that all we heard last year was Brad Keselowski whining and moaning about what a disadvantage they were at and how they were going to get their butts handed to them. And then Kevin Harvick turns around and whips Truex at Texas last year, and they come out of the box this year blowing them away. At Daytona, we heard that they're positive they've got a new body coming for next year. I would not be surprised by the time Charlotte gets here and Penske's calling up Edsel saying, hey, can we postpone that for another year because we got it going on right now. Yeah, it's shocking, to be honest with you, that you've got the oldest body style in the sport, and it – for lack of a better term, it's about the horsepower, stupid. It's a matter of Yates makes huge horsepower out of engines that can run at higher temperatures or cooler, or however you want to look at it. They're more efficient at cooling than the others still to this day, I think. And I feel like that is the key that makes Ford run better, is that they are able to run with less of an opening at the front of the car, however they make that happen. Which gives them more front down force and makes them faster.
Phil, why do you think Ford's been so dominant? They've led 84% of the laps. That's insane.
It is insane. But it's also, there's a couple of reasons why this is so. One, Penske is probably the best team on plate tracks these days. Ryan Blaney led over 100 laps in the Daytona 500 because he was able to control the flow and keep everyone single while running up against the outside wall, or passing that situ. And then the last few races, it's been Harvick all the time. So, I mean, just between those two guys, I mean, that's what, 395 in the last couple of races. He didn't lead any in the Daytona 500.
And then Blaney led 118 in Daytona, so that's over 500 right there.
Yeah, that's 500. 513 laps right there. I mean, in all honesty, it's basically two guys spanking everybody. The rest of the other four teams are pretty good. They're not that much better than everyone else, but they're pretty goddamn good. I think it just seems outsized right now.
Yeah, I mean, but like you said, Phil, they are pretty good. I mean, Eric Almirola, he's made a difference in that 10 car, and he's got, what, two top 10s this year? Maybe one? He's got, but they've all been, like, 11th, 13th, and a 10th or something like that. They've all been really good finishes. And like you said, Neff, he probably should have won the 500. And, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he got to victory lane this year outside of a plate track because that team's running well. And obviously, Stuart Haas is running well with Bowyer getting that first top five since 13 on a mile and a half, and then Harvick killing the field the past 2 weeks. But, Neff, I know you wanted, we spoke off the record, and you wanted to talk about the pit gun problems. So I'm going to give you this moment. Go on your rant, do your thing, and I'll catch you on the other side.
I don't know if I want to go on a rant. I'm just a little, and I went off a little bit about this on Twitter over the weekend, that we were going to go down this road of standardized pit guns. And you have a pit gun that has been the industry standard frame, for lack of a better word, the skeleton of the standard pit gun that's been on pit road since basically they opened up Daytona International Speedway. The Hurst Specialties and the IR Thunder Gun has been on pit road and has been the standard for 60 years, basically, 55 years. And you go to go have a standardized pit gun, and they went with the lowest bidder, at least the way I understand it, was the lowest bidder with an Italian company that I know makes pneumatic tools, but I was unaware they made pit guns. I have since been educated a little bit on that, that they were very prominent in IndyCar and sports cars, and that I haven't confirmed it yet, but there were a couple teams supposedly in NASCAR that were using their guns, but they were not commonplace. And the fact that you have made the decision to go with a standardized gun and you go with an unproven commodity, I'm positive that NASCAR felt they had done their due diligence and their testing on it, but we've seen how abused these guns get during a race and how those guys that are pit changers baby their guns. I mean, there's guys that sleep with them because they take such good care of them. And now you're just throwing them in a box and handing them out every weekend. Yes, they're getting gone over and they're tested after the race, but I feel like the decision, while it was probably researched, I don't feel like it was researched well enough. And now we're going to get it right. Don't get me wrong. I'm throwing NASCAR under the bus on it because I think they deserve it. I think they will get it right, but it's just kind of disconcerting that you've gone to something that's supposed to be standardized and bare, I don't want to say bare minimum, but basic, rather than exotic materials and ultra-fine tolerances trying to grab every hundredth of a second. You went to something standardized, and we're having numerous failures 2 and 3 races into the season. If you were going to see it, I fully expected it to be like 5 or 6 races into the season when these things had some miles on them. The fact that we had so many failures in Atlanta was just shocking to me.
Yeah, and it seems like it's just, to my knowledge, because I'm not too familiar with these pit guns, but it looks like there's just a pin going out kind of where, like, the intersects or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where the socket goes onto it, and I believe there's a pin that they drive into there that holds the socket on, in place. But, I mean, even where they had the initial problems the first week was where the hose hooked on to the base of the gun. Yeah. And I mean, the Thunder Gun for years had a foot long or 18 inch long piece of hose that came off of there that they hooked to. I don't know how somebody didn't see that right off the bat when they were looking into these things to say, hey, shouldn't there be an extra hose here so that we're not putting that stress at that joint where the air was going into the gun?
Yeah, and like you said, it's kind of like random selection. They draw a number and then they get that box, which I think, I can't come up with one word, maybe weird. I've never heard of something like that. That just seems bizarre.
No, actually, it's, I don't, See, I don't think that's that weird at all, because it's the same process they use for restrictor plates. Yeah. It's designed to take bias out of it or to eliminate any potential for favoritism. So, I mean, I like the way they do that, that it's totally random. It happens right before the race, so the teams don't have it in their possession and have any potential for messing around. And it takes out the potential for there to be any kind of even perception of favoritism. So I like that idea. I feel like they went with somebody that did not have enough of a proven track record when you're dealing with something that is so crucial to the sport. I feel like it was a poor choice.
Now, Mike, you have this weekly column where you talk to the crew chief's tech talk, which comes out every Friday.
Friday, yes, sir.
And so what are the crew chiefs saying about this so far? I know it's new and you've only talked to a few about it, but what have they said?
Talking to Trent Owens about it, he was, as I said, he was a little concerned about the fact that we were having problems this early in the process. He felt like there would have been problems later, you know, once they had some miles on them. So he's a little worried about it at this point. This week's column is with Mike Wheeler. I actually talked to him today, and I'll be compiling the article here in the next day or so. But he said, thankfully, and knocking on wood, they have not had a problem yet on the 11 car, which I told him, you have officially jinxed yourself, and you're probably going to break three guns when they're at Phoenix.
They've got other problems on pit row too, though.
Yeah. He said that, you know, he felt like they had an advantage, but he didn't feel like it was that much of an advantage. The part that he's bothered about is that you used to have control over everything in your pit box. Nothing that you worked with on your car was out of your control at any time. And now you have this element that has come in here that you don't control, and you're relying on something, assuming that someone else has done the job and put it together right and tested it right and all that. And that's the part that he feels uncomfortable about, is that the control of it has been taken away from the teams.
Phil, I'm going to go to you on this one now. Do you like it so far, or do you like how it was last year and the previous years before that? Phil?
With the pit gun?
Yeah, with the pit gun. Do you like the way it is this year, the new way, the new style, the new gun, or do you like how it was in the past?
I mean, in all honesty, this is going to take a little getting used to. Seems like the stops have already gotten quite a bit quicker. There's a whole different, in addition to all the other pit rules, which is another. Together, but everyone has to hold these guns differently. My understanding is they're bigger than me.
Yep.
That. I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, they are a little bit bigger. And again, that's one of those things that every changer kind of customized his gun for himself, and they would shave in certain spots and get it to where it worked best in their hands. And now with it being a standardized gun, and again, the Paoli is a little bit bigger frame, it's taking some getting used to.
So basically it was to the point where people had one amount of two, like, grooves in there. They basically melded their gun handle to their hand.
Absolutely.
It's such a science in itself.
And the one other thing I would like to say is I applaud NASCAR for doing this. I mean, Joe Gibbs Racing spent millions of dollars in gaining tenths to hundreds of seconds on pit lane. And the research and development money aside, the rebuilds and the parts and pieces that were going into these guns with the exotic metals and everything, a new gun was, as what I've been told, was going for like $80,000 to $100,000 by the time they put them together. And when you're talking, I mean, that is just ludicrous to me. So you're talking about something that, yeah, I mean, you're talking about something that was saving, you know, tens and hundreds, which ultimately won races for them, but I feel like the incremental gains that they were getting and the amount of money that was having to go into these guns over and over again versus the reward you were getting was just, it wasn't worth it. And I applaud the RTA for wanting to go down this road. I applaud NASCAR for going down the road. And like I said, I have no doubt they will get it worked out. I just a little, and let me also throw out in transparency, I used to work at Ingersoll Rand. I am intimately familiar with the motorsports arm of Ingersoll Rand. So that was why I was kind of immersed in it, and I saw it all the time. So I know what those guns were about and how much they were tested and worked on and everything. And that's why I feel like the decision on this one was taken in a means of looking for the lowest bidder rather than the best quality product to bring to the sport.
Yeah, I definitely think it'll take some time to get used to. And, you know, it's like a science just of itself. But as we move forward here, we'll skip over the Xfinity Series because Kyle Larson kind of dominated that race. And then Kyle Busch won the truck race. Unless you guys have anything to say, we'll move on to a bright side of the week. We're taping this podcast on a Tuesday this week. And earlier today, guys, we had a really cool moment on Twitter. You know, Matt DiBenedetto came out and said that essentially that him and Go Fast Racing weren't going to be able to make it to Phoenix unless they had some money and a sponsor. So Denny Hamlin, Kevin Harvick, and Hall of Famer Darrell Waltrip stepped up to donate $5,000 and got him a sponsor just within a few hours. We don't really typically see this, but how critical is it to see, Mike, you know, drivers helping out other drivers in a situation like this where Go Fast Racing has a charter, but they wouldn't have been able to make it to the race?
I'm curious how now, I wonder if we were at a, you know, 46 or 47 cars showing up for a 43 car field, if people would have been so anxious to jump on board and kind of try to help them out. I kind of get the feeling that, and I don't want to say that NASCAR would put pressure on these guys because I don't believe that's the case at all, but I feel like everybody's looking at this from the health of the sport and knowing that under 36 cars showing up the track would be a really bad visual. And I think that's part of why these guys are jumping on board. Yes, I think they're helping a fellow racer out, a fellow race team out. I think it helps that the 32 is a bunch of racers that are doing it the old school way of, you know, whatever they can to get to the track. And God, I wish he would have won the 500, but that's a whole nother story. But I feel like it would have been different a few years ago. And I feel like the fact that the charters are in play now is at least in some way influencing decisions to do this. But at the same time, I think it's amazing. I'm really glad to see it. I love the crowdfunding idea. I love the fact that DiBenedetto said they've already got a couple companies that are now talking to them about maybe doing something in the future. And it's great to see a team, you know, potentially find some more sponsorship. I hope that other companies see what happens with DiBenedetto's team and see the groundswell and the fan support of it, hoping that there is some, and they decide to get back into the sport. This may be that watershed moment that we are all hoping for that starts to bring new businesses and new organizations into the sport and opens us up to a whole new demographics that we've been searching for years.
Yeah, and the cool thing about it is, I mean, in my opinion, is DiBenedetto's one of us, right? He's a hard worker, he's a hard-nosed racer, and that team, like you said, Mike's hard-nosed racers, and they're just a bunch of racers. And so to see some of the, you know, stars of the sport, Kevin Harvick, who's won the last two races, step up and donate some money, and Denny Hamlin, who gets a bad rap sometimes, and then even Darrell Waltrip, I think that's incredible. And Phil, what's your take on this? Because, I mean, this is just amazing to see, in my opinion.
First off, I think they would have still raced the full race on Sunday, even if they didn't get the sponsor. They just would have had a white car. That appears to not be the case now. I find that it is kind of sad that you could have a situation where you would have such a situation less than a month or a year. But it shows that Matt DiBenedetto is someone who's fairly well respected in the garage. I've never personally talked with him before, but I mean, he seems like a decent guy. We know that He spent an entire Xfinity season S&P for the motors years. I mean, he's been in the peripheries of the sport at times. He had the development. He did K&N full time after that. I mean, it has not been easy for Mr. DiBenedetto. But over the past couple of years, he's really kind of grown up. And in regards to Waltrip, this isn't the first time he stepped up in situations like this to provide sponsorship. I'm not sure if I know Mike's probably familiar with this, but do you remember the whole lunacy surrounding the Angelos Motorsports thing back in 2003?
Yeah, I don't know. I just think this is really cool, and I have talked to DiBenedetto. I think Mike has too. He's just very authentic. He's, like I said, he's one of us. Yeah. So I think it's really cool to see some of these top-notch drivers, you know, pay some money for to help them get to the track. But guys, as we move on to Phoenix now, we got a doubleheader there this weekend with the Xfinity and Cup Series. Mike, who do you got going to victory lane in each series?
Xfinity side, I think we may finally see us have another Xfinity regular. I would like to think the 7 of Allgaier has shown some strength at Phoenix in the past. He looked pretty strong, honestly, at Vegas, and I would not be surprised to see old J.A. put her in victory lane in Phoenix. Fortunately for me, you're letting me go first, so I'm going to take the freebie and the Cup side, and I'm jumping on Harvick because I just the way that team is running right now and the way he knows to get around Phoenix, I can't imagine it being anybody else. But my dark horse is going to be the shocker. If somebody surprises, I think it'll be the 88 of Alex Bowman. I think you're going to see him resurrect the magic and get the old 88 to finish the deal in Phoenix this time around.
Well, you stole both my picks, so Phil, on to you. Phil, who do you got?
Mr. Kyle Busch has entered in the Xfinity race on Saturday, and obviously whenever he shows up, he's typically a tough out as long as strange things don't happen. So I feel like he's going to pick up another victory on Saturday. Sunday could be interesting, assuming Harvick doesn't run off high. I mean, I feel like it could be Hamlin. I'm really leaning towards Chase Elliott since he was so strong there in the fall.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Denny Hamlin, like you said, he dominated the fall race. But the last year's races, they were kind of weird, if you remember. Ryan Newman stayed out late and got a victory, a much-needed victory for himself and Richard Childress Racing. And then Matt Kenseth kind of came out of nowhere in the late stages and won what could have been his final race in his penultimate race in the series. So I think we're in for a good weekend, guys, at least all we can hope, right? Hopefully, you know, Kyle Busch doesn't run away in Xfinity, which if last week's any indication, it won't be. And hopefully Harvick doesn't kind of just drive away into the sunset for a third straight week. But until next week when we will review Phoenix and preview Auto Club Speedway, we'll catch you around, and thanks for tuning in.
Peace out.